or become humble.
A humble alcoholic is an oxymoron.
Some kind of a moron, I don't know. It just isn't true. They didn't all practice humility, and neither do we. It isn't true. You know, it isn't humble. I'm very, very smart. What am I supposed to tell you? I'm dumb, and that's humble? That's not humble. That's bullshit. And I know why I'm smart. I was born smart. God made me smart. I didn't make me smart. God made me smart. I have an ability to communicate this program to you. I think it's none of my business. I got that. I do it. It's not my thing. It's God's thing. And that's what this prayer is about. This is a very interesting prayer, even from a theological sense. In my generation, which is the generation of the Spanish-American War, if you were fortunate enough to go to a Catholic university, you were required to take 4 years of theology and 4 years of Thomistic, St. Thomas philosophy. And so I was, and I qualify by training as sort of an amateur theologian. And I know what prayers are supposed to be like. This is a very, very unusual prayer. Very unusual prayer. When I was going through the school system, especially in the grammar school, I used to hear this all the time from Sister. And Sister was a very good teacher, and I had 8 of them, one each year. And each one basically said the same thing and gave me her understanding of God. But one of the things I heard all the time was, God loves good little boys. I heard that all the time. The trouble with that was, I was not a good little boy. I was a bad little boy. I was a little brat. And I'd wait for those good little boys to show up, those ones that had clean shirts and they had pencils, and I'd whack on them and steal their lunch. You know, I was a little rat. I smoked in the 4th grade. Yeah. Complete idiot. So, if God loved good little boys, I'm screwed. I'm out, right? Look at this. It says, take all of me, good and bad. Good and bad. God likes bad little boys. God likes bad little boys just as well, and you and I come here with that combination of both, do we not? Good and bad. And that bad, as we characterize bad, is very, very useful. Thank you, Tom. When that new person comes through that door, and they say, you don't understand, I mean, I'd like to get sober, but you don't understand, I just got out of jail. I'm a bad person. Ah, are you kidding? Who got out of jail? 90 guys put up their hands, talk to him. They just talk out of jail. So you don't understand. I'm really not worthy to come here. I got fired from my job. Jesus Christ, that's almost a prerequisite, you know. Everybody. I said, well, you know, I'm sinful. I committed adultery. Oh Christ, the whole room stands up. Hello, Charlie. You know, let's swap a few stories here. Good and bad, see? Later on, it says to us, no matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. Correct? That bad business will benefit others. The book says sometimes an alcoholic's only asset is his past. Correct? Flat broke. Past. What do we share with each other? Experience, strength, and hope. Good and bad. God loves bad little boys. Then it says the purpose of this prayer. Now, I was taught there were many kinds of prayer. Petitions, of course, asking for things, and prayers for forgiveness, and that kind of stuff. But that all prayers were, in effect, to ask God to come into our lives. This prayer has a very specific purpose. Look at it, what it says. It says so that I will be useful to him
and to my fellows, to him and to you, be useful. That's the only purpose of this prayer, that I, you, we, be a useful member of Alcoholics Anonymous. How's that? And is that a difficult thing? You go to your meeting, correct? You have a home group. You have a sponsor. You're a useful member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's what it is. And that's all it is. And that's all that's required of us. Because the power of this program is going to take everything we give them, good and bad, and turn that bad stuff into gold. See, I hear people say about their inventory, they're taking out the garbage. That's not garbage. That's not garbage. That's gold. Because that's your experience that you're going to share with somebody else. Those defects, if the guy comes, he says, I'm afraid. Of course you're afraid. Of course you are afraid. My God. How can you be an active alcoholic and not be afraid? Of course you're afraid. Of course. He said, I've done the wrong. Of course you've done the wrong thing. We've all done it. See, the whole purpose here, if I may say, is identification. That you're the same as I'm the same. We're not different, you and I. Nothing separates us. The disease of alcoholism made us the same. Nothing separates us. We are fellows. Gender does not separate us. Position in life does not separate us. Economic, social advantage does not separate us. The book says, and it is so true, we are folks who would not normally mix. It says we are survivors of a great liner that has sunk, and we're in that rowboat, rowing away, surviving the shipwreck. And brothers, that rowboat's going no place unless we all take our shot at the oars, right? And that's what this is. We speak to him, to the power that sustains me, sustains you, sustains this program, always has, always will. And that's all we ask. We say to him, we're ready. We're ready. I'm ready. You ready? Sure, we're ready. The fourth step and the fifth step are really the answer to the third step prayer. Third step prayer that you and I say, we offer ourselves, we'd like to be of service to you. And the answer comes very clearly. It says, clean up your own house. Clean up your own house. Later on, the book says, see to it that your relationship with him is right. And great events will come to pass for you and for countless others. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right. And great events will come to pass for you and for countless others. I count this opportunity as a great event that has come to pass. And so if you would, I'll say it and you say it after me, because I know you're not as familiar with this as you are with the third step prayer. If you wish, and if you're ready. Now, if you're not ready, don't do it, because it's not going to do you any good. But if you're ready, and if you think you're ready, if you know you're ready, be ready, then do this with me if you're ready. My Creator, I'm now willing that you should have all of me. Repeat after me. Good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. He goes on to say, you have then completed step 7. Let's come back at 2 o'clock after lunch, right? I'm still an alcoholic. And that last discussion, I'll tell you, it's, every once in a while you find out what's important, you know, because I spent a lot of time chasing things around that weren't important. I thought it was at the time, but I found out around here what's important. This is important. This is important. I used to say to him, I used to, you know, newcomers, we all whine, and I would whine. It was very important I get a good job. I thought it was very important. And I say, how do I, you know, what should I do? How can I, I'm, oh, this elusive good job was always. And he quoted the book, he said, the answer to all of our problems is more spiritual development. So I say, all right, sounds good. How do I develop spiritually? He says, well, why don't you try mopping that floor over there? He said, I'm an attorney. I don't know how to mop floors. And what the hell has mopping floors got to do with getting a good job? He says, I don't know, but I mop floors for 3 years. I got a hell of a job. Bastard. And he would do that all the time until, and you know what he said to me? He said, look, if that's so important to you, why don't you just spend all your time looking for a better job and leave me alone? I tell that to people I sponsor. They give me some crap, I can't go tonight, I'm on the bowling. I say, please. You want to be on a bowling team? Be my guest. Be on the bowling team. Don't give me a lot of bullshit. Just go to the bowling team. Leave me alone. Now, Miami is a big place. And we had a lot of people down there who had a power greater than their own called Eastern Airlines. And say, well, tonight's the meeting. I got to put in my time at Eastern Airlines. I got to build up my work at Eastern Airlines. Eastern Airlines is very important. And who the hell would ever have thought that there would come a day when there was no Eastern Airlines and a power greater than their own went bankrupt? How the hell is it? A lot of people down there work for Pan American Airlines and spent their time improving their prospects with Pan American Airlines. A lot of people down there spent a lot of time working for a thing called Southeast Bank. Who the hell could ever imagine that all of these institutions would someday just not be there? And they chose, these people, to put their reliance on something that was man-made. See? Human powers. Human powers. They put their reliance on human powers. And so have I, and so have you at various times of our lives, have we not? And human powers have let us down for one reason or the other. Isn't that true? It's, of course it's true. It's true that other people have, for one reason or the other, deliberately, intentionally, negligently, carelessly, one reason or the other, what the hell difference does it make? They let me down. I relied on them for something to supply me with something, and I didn't get it. And even sadder to say, people have relied on me, and I haven't performed and haven't given them what they relied on me for, whether intentionally or deliberately or just the way things work out. So I found out that my, as the book says, see to it that your real reliance must always be upon him. He will give you the fellowship you crave. That's what it says. It's true. And in that seventh step, you know, that prayer is a, sort of a long prayer to know about. It says we say something like this, and I say, I do the seventh prayer, step prayer every day, but I do it in a different way every day. And some days I don't do it quite as long. Here's a version of the seven-step prayer that I use. Maybe it could help you. Maybe it wouldn't. I don't really know. But here it is anyhow. Please let me be a member of AA today. How's that? Just let me be a member of AA today. Good enough? Be useful? Take it all, good or bad? Whatever you want. Just let me be a member of AA today. Thomas Merton was a Trappist monk, very prolific author, and people of my generation read his biography in the 50s, his conversion into Catholicism, his entry into a Trappist monastery, and it was called the Seven-Story Mountain. It was a bestseller in the 50s for many years, two or three years on the bestseller list. And Merton died some years ago in Asia. He had become very Eastern toward the end of his life, very Buddhist and Hindu, although still a Trappist monk. And after he died, they found a prayer that he had, that he had this, they allowed him to build this hermitage. He had a one-room cinder block thing in Kentucky at the Abbey of Gethsemane. And when they went through his stuff, they found that he had a thing stuck on his desk in this little cubicle he built for himself. And it was a prayer, and they've since published it. And when Merton prayed, he said, God, I thank you for everything you've given me. I thank you for everything you've taken away from me. And I thank you for everything you left me. Not bad, huh? Thank you for everything you've given me. You've given me life, whatever talents I have, sometimes they are considerable. Thank you for taking away that desire to drink, and that active alcoholism, and thank you most of all for what you left me, the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And each and every one of you. Good prayer, eh? It's a good prayer. And we pray, do we not, to be useful. And as the fourth and fifth step are the answer to the third step prayer, the eighth and ninth step are the answer to the seventh step prayer. You want to be useful? You say to God, please let me be useful. Say, you want to be useful? Fine. Clear away the wreckage of your past. That's how you're going to be useful. You're not going to be useful to me if you spend your time ducking and dodging around because you haven't made amends to the people you've harmed. You're not going to be useful to me or to your group if you keep worrying about people you screwed 10 years ago that you won't get even with. If you want to be useful to me, says he, first of all, make a list of all the people you've harmed and become willing to make amends to them all. So I'm hanging around some more. I'm pretty cool now. You know, I know where to park the car. I know where the bathroom is. I know how to get the coffee. Newcomers are coming around, you know. Sit over there, I say. Don't drink or go to a meeting. You'll be all right. Stop that goddamn whining. I say, what's the matter with these people? And he says, have you made a list of... I'm working on that. A couple of months go by. He says, where's the eight-step list? How about dead people? You know that look? He says, look, it doesn't say make a list of all people now alive who you harm. It just says make a list of all people you've harmed. All. That's not a big word. All. Everybody. Oh. Everybody. Yeah. Oh. Dead people. Oh, yeah. Dead people. Oh. Oh. Oh, about a month later, he said, where's the list? Wait a minute. I said, how about people who have moved away? And I'll never see him again. He said, all. See, each one. Everybody. Oh, everyone. He says, all. Not a big word. You're very bright. All. 2 months later, where's the... I said, wait a minute. How about people who didn't catch me? How about the ones I screwed and they don't know it? He said, forget it. You don't have to do the list. I said, that's good. He said, I don't. He said, no, you're exempt. You don't have to do the 8-step list. I said, good. What should I do? I don't want to tell you what he told me. He said, you don't have to do anything. Why don't you just buy a gun and shoot yourself in the head? He said, because you don't want to do this. You want to get drunk. Ah. He said, stop the bullshit and write down everybody you harmed. He said, I could write your list in 2 seconds. Now, since that time, I've seen an awful lot of 8-step lists. They're all the same. They're the same as mine. Who do we screw? The nearest, get it, first and foremost, right? The closer you are, the sooner you get it, the longer you get it, and the more often you get it. Huh? Who do you go around screwing perfect strangers? First you do it to your family because they're handy. They're there. So you do it to all of your family. You screw them. You harm them. Of course you do. Then you do it to the people you work with and for. Of course, they're next because that's where you are next most. And then you do all of your friends and all of your neighbors. Who the hell else would we do? I could write down, I make up a form, just fill in the names. You know, you marry, what's your wife's name? There. Name your kids. Boom, 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 boom. And we do it the same way to everybody. We're selfish, we're self-centered, we're dishonest, we cheat, we lie, we steal, we disappoint. It's part of active alcoholism. None of us is worse than the other. We do. The only thing I haven't seen around here is cannibalism. The guy in Milwaukee, if he was in a program, he would, you know. But other than that, so you did it. Huh? Write it down. See, and I'm fooling around with this thing for about 4 months. And he gives me, you know, the ultimatum. So I write a list. And I give it to him. He takes a look, gives it right back. So what's the matter now? He said, where's this man? The man who fired me as a tenured professor, dean of law school, he had gone on to become a federal judge. So where's he? He said, he fired me. Yeah, he said, I know that, but where's his name on this list? I said, fuck him, he ain't on my list. He screwed me. He fired me. He said, are you kidding? You harmed him. I harmed him. He screwed me out of a lifetime job. Bastard. He said, unless and until you're willing to make amends to this man, you're never going to get sober. I pouted for about 2 months. Prick. Said, my name's not on his list. Said, he don't have a list, stupid. He's not an alcoholic like you. He don't even know you're alive. He's gone on to bigger and better things. He's a federal appeals judge, second highest court in the country. He's worried about you. Some drunk rattling around. Bastard. So I put his name on the list. A funny thing happened to me when I was writing that second list. He rejected the first list. When I was putting names down, it was sort of like a click, and I said, all right, all right. I don't know how I'm going to do this, but I'll I'll take care of it. But he was such a nag, this sponsor of mine. He's always on my case. I said to him one day, what the hell are we talking about here? Is this magic? You know, this is crazy or something? I'm writing people's names on lists and all other things happen. What are we talking? This is witchcraft. You know, this has no possible logical relationship to anything, does it? You're writing a guy's name down on paper, what you did to him, and all of a sudden you're supposed to feel better. I mean, what the hell is that? Take it out of the context, doesn't mean a thing. I said, is it magic? He said, it's magic. I said, well, I don't believe in magic. He said, well, that's too bad. You should. Because this is magic. I said, yeah, it's magic for you, you dumb bastard. So let me tell you what happened. This was in like 1966. And this guy that fired me had gone on to be a federal court judge, appellate judge, Second Circuit, very important guy. And I'm in Palm Beach, Florida one time, speaking at one of the things, at dinner they had. And I'm out to dinner with a guy who, very successful AA guy down there. And he says, you know, you should take the bar exam here. Because someday you might want to live here and open up an office. And this guy was chairman of the board of a bank. I like guys like that. Love chairman of the board of a bank to get sober. Love those guys. I said, oh, okay. So I took the bar exam. And of course I passed it. And, of course, they sent me a form to fill out because I was an out-of-state practicing lawyer, and it said, list five judges before you have appeared, for whom you have appeared, who will vouch for you. And I put down the name of the fellow who fired me, who's on the second highest court in the United States, and before whom I had appeared, and to whom I had made all my amends, and who ultimately had been on my list. And now it's 1974 or five, I don't know. And then it has another question, you ever been fired from a job? I said, yes. Why? Alcoholism. Please explain. Active alcoholic, member of AA, boopity-boop, stick it in your nose. I get a letter. The letter says, please come to West Palm Beach and see boopy-doopy and explain your answer to question 72. Have you ever been fired? So, down I come, I walk into an office in Palm Beach, here's this guy about 400 pounds with red suspenders behind the desk. He said, Mr. O'Keefe? He says, I have a letter here from the United States Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit. You don't have to be interviewed any further. Welcome to Florida. Magic? Magic. Write somebody's name down, 1966. Right? 1975, the guy opens up the gate and says, step over here. This is where the money is. Come right in. Take a crack at the dough. What is that? What the hell is that? I don't know. That is, but that's what happened. And I didn't want to make amends to that guy any more than I wanted to go to the moon. Bastard. Fire me and nerve him. Well, last winter I got a phone call from some other guy. This judge is now retired. He's had some medical problems. And I got a call from another guy. Please come up and see the judge. So I went up and see the judge, and he fell all over me. Well, just having a love feast last winter because he's sick and he thinks he's going to die. I said, please, please. We're pals. I can tell you all kinds of stories about this and all the things that happened because I made this list. It's probably not the best list that was ever made, but it was my list, and I made it. And I went around, and, you know, it's very difficult. Our book says, for instance, you can scarcely make amends to a family in a lifetime. Scarcely make amends. In a lifetime, what are you going to do? You have a lot of people, seven kids. How do you make amends for years of drunkenness? All but one of my kids. Well, I guess all but two of my kids saw me drunk. Five kids saw me drunk. The other two did. I don't know how you make amends. So I said to my sponsor, what do you do about these babysitting. He said, you're going to go to a lot of Little League games. I used to go to Little League games when I was drunk. I used to have a bottle in the car, and I'd park in a parking lot, and I'd watch the game. You know, when they put those batting helmets on, I couldn't tell one from the other. But if he was on my kid's team and he got a hit, I'd turn on the lights in the car and have a drink. And if it really looked like one of my kids, I'd blow the horn. And I would say, what the hell is, who's out that in the parking lot? That's O'Keefe. He's out there drunk in his car, you know, watching the ball game. That harms your kids. So I went to a lot of Little League games sober. I was set up in the stands with the mothers. Nothing like a great baseball game, 32 to 20, next to the mother of the second baseman. Oh, brother. I'll tell you, listen to this. I had a guy up there. I had a very curious definition of harms. I recognized physical harm. I wasn't very physical, so that wasn't much. And I recognize financial harm, but that's all I didn't recognize emotional harm, spiritual harm, any other kind of harm. It's, I don't, none of that wimpy behavior. If I told you were an asshole, why would you get upset? I wouldn't tell you an asshole unless you were one. Say, well, you just got him all excited over there. I said, I told him, he is one. Come here, you. You're in it. That goes for your wife, too, and your cat. These wimpy bastards, they can't handle it. A little criticism. I want them. Nerds. They shouldn't be walking around. They should stay home. Stay out of traffic. Bad attitude. That was my attitude. Very bad attitude. I also had a very peculiar notion of what an amends meant. There was a guy up there named Stewart. Great guy. And a lawyer. And the last summer before I stopped drinking, so you know the shape I'm in, Stewart hired me to write a book with him. I was a professor of a certain subject, and he wanted a book written, and he wanted his name on it for business reasons. He was a lawyer. And it wouldn't hurt me in academic life either, so I agreed to write the book. He agreed to pay me. And he was very faithful. He sent a check every Friday, and I was very faithful. I cashed it every Friday. And the end of the summer, there was no book. Now, of course, he was on my list. I recognized that kind of, I screwed him out of some dough. It was about $15,000. And my sponsor knew him, too. And he said to me, what are you going to do about Stewart? He saw Stewart's name. Oh, I said, I'm going to take care of Stewart. He said, good, what are you going to do? I said, we're going to go to his office and see him. He said, yeah, that's good. And when you go to his office and see him, what are you going to do? I said, I'm going to tell him I'm sorry. My sponsor said, let me see if I have this right now. You owe a New York lawyer $15,000, and you're going to tell him you're sorry. And that's it? I said, that's it. He said, how about the $15,000? I said, I don't have $15,000. I don't have $1,500. I'm just getting started here. He says, what do you think amends means? I said, amends means I'm going over there and tell him I'm sorry. And you have no idea, I said, how sincere I am when I tell you how sorry I am that I owe Stewart all that money. The depth of my sincerity knows no bounds. I am completely, honestly sorry that I can't pay him back the dough. He gives me that, you know that look, don't you? Just, you know that superior, smirky. He opens up the book, you know what it says? It says, a mumbled apology will not do. I said, do you mean I? He said, that's right. So that's a lot of money. He said, you drank it up. You don't have to bring that up. I said, yes. My drinking was very bad. In fact, my relationship with drinking was just like the time that cat screwed the skunk. He didn't get all he wanted, but he got all he could stand. Saul, he said, you put Stewart on hold, and we'll see what happens. Well, here's what happened. Lawyers split fees. You know, everybody knows lawyers split fees. I had a case, somebody had died from a very remarkable antibiotic. It was very effective. It said it had a terrible side effect. It'd kill you. And it takes out your spleen. So it was a terrific antibiotic. It was called chloromycin, but it took out your spleen. And it took out this guy's spleen, and I was representing. And that was the subject of the book I was writing, Wrongful Death. So I took the case down to lawyers, and I gave it to Stewart. I said, Stewart, you take care of this case. So when the money comes, it was, you know, it's a, that's a valuable case. It's worth a lot of dough. It was a good life, very valuable life. So in the fullness of time, I got a call from Stewart. He said, it's done. And you have to sign up there. Most places sign where the money goes. You know, you attest as an attorney, the money's going here, the money's going there. So I went down, I signed, and his office signed up everything. And it was, you know, it was more than enough. I said, now, when you get the dough, Stuart, take the dough, you, that I owe you, just send me the rest, everything, hotsy-totsy. Now we're pals. And we shook hands, and we hugged, we kissed, you know, do our little jig. And the following Saturday, I was sitting at home with my friend Bob from the group, and here comes the mailman. And I said to Bob, I think I got a check in here, and if so, I'll take you to lunch. And there was a letter from Stewart with a check for the full amount, the whole amount. So the letter says, Dear Ray, here's a check for the whole amount. This was some time ago. Let bygones be bygones. We understand you're doing a good job in that program. Keep it up. Best regards. Love. Stewart. What's that? That's when I knew the fucking program worked. I don't need my room to light up. I don't need that wind coming through. Just put that check on my desk, and you watch me have a spiritual experience. Now, what is that? I mean, what in the world does that? How does that? How do you do that? I no more wanted to give him anything. Bastard. It wasn't my fault he wanted to write a stupid book. I didn't ask him to write the stupid book. He asked me to write it. You do what you're told. Our book says to us, 9 out of 10 times the unexpected happens. That's what the book says. 90% of the time the unexpected happens. We think we're so slick with, you know, we're figuring out what's going to happen a year from June. You're having a clue. I haven't the slightest idea. Every day I get up and say, oh, look what happened now. Look what happened now. It's the most incredible thing. It just happens. It just happens. I don't know how it happens. And it's very, very important. The 12 and 12 says that defective relationships were the immediate cause of all of our problems, including our alcoholism. Imagine that. Medicine doesn't know the cause of alcoholism. They talk, you know, like they do know, but they don't know. They talk crap. They talk about endorphins and neurotransmitters and all this baloney, and then they end up with the X factor. If you know any science, the X factor is the unknown. They don't know. We know. Our book says defective relationships are the primary cause of all of our troubles, including our alcoholism. Defective relationships. There is a piece of me missing that keeps me from truly relating to you. Selfish, self-centered. I can't connect with you. I can't relate to you. See to it, it says your relationship with him is right, and you will be able to relate one to the other. You will find, it says, the fellowship you crave, and a fellowship is that relationship that you and I have. It's so close. That we can sit down one with the other when we're almost strangers and tell each other what's the matter.
Yeah.
What's the matter? I thought, that's it. That happened to me. Yeah, I had it. Right? We can do that. We can be close. And not know each other very well at all. Ask for help. Why not? Why not? The Buddha say this is that. This is that. It's all connected. We are connected in the best possible way. We are fellows in a great fellowship. Fellowship of the Spirit. Right? And we have to pay our dues. We just have to pay our dues. We have to make amends. Clear away, it says, the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you receive. Join us. Surely you'll meet some of us as we trudge the road of happy destiny. It's a trudge. It ain't a hop, skip, and a jump, gang. We trudge that road of happy destiny, but sooner or later, later or sooner, we're all going to the same place. Now it's all going to be a spiritual awakening. But you can't do it if you are living in the wreckage of the past. And that's what the amends are. Clear away the wreckage of your past. That's what it is. And do it openly and freely. I had nothing but good experiences, although I went to see one clunk lawyer I had screwed in a non-financial sort of a, I had a very bad mouth. Very bad mouth. It's not got much better. Very quick, though. Very quick mouth. And I had interfered with this guy's practice by bad-mouthing him, and he knew about it. So I went over to see him. I was sober 2-3 years. And he was a big shot. Everybody I know is a big shot. So he said, what do you want? I said, I'm here to straighten out that misunderstanding we had when I said those things about you a few years ago. He said, I didn't like you very much then, and I don't like you much better now, and you do me a great favor, get the hell out of here. Boy. What a rat. I call up my sponsor. I said, this prick won't sit still while I amend him. And my sponsor said, what do you think it's for him? Oh, I see, not catching me. I know that's not for him. I know that. It's all for me, said I. He said, wrong again, dumbbell. He said, listen, if it's not for him, and if it's not for me, what the hell's going on here? And he opens up that book again. He was forever doing that. Here's what the book said. The book says, this is a paraphrase. Of course, the book says, of course, you want to get your life in order. Of course you do. Who the hell doesn't want to get their lives in order at this stage of the game? Of course, of course, of course. But that is not an end in itself. The real purpose is to be of maximum service to God and those around you. See? That's the purpose. That's the answer to the seven-step prayer. The seven-step prayer says, I want to be useful. At the end of this step, it says, you want to be useful? You do 8 and 9, you will be of maximum use to God and those around you. Fits like a glove. Correct? Correct. And that's what it's about. It's not about drinking. I haven't said a word about drinking all day long. It's about being of service and developing a relationship with God. See to it. See to it that your relationship with Him is right. That's the whole point here. And the book tells us, before the famous promises, you all know the famous promises, but before that, the book says this on the very same page. The spiritual life, it says, is not a theory. That's what it says. And they underline this, they italicize this, we have to live it. This is not a program of bullshit, this is a program of living, of action. No, you can't talk the talk and not walk the walk. You can't do it. You won't stay sober, that's all. We don't have any sanctions here, you know. I can't send you to a year, 90 days or something. You send a note home to your mother, he's not cooperating. It's one they used to send home about me, I throw him in the sewer. Our sanction is much more dangerous than our sanction is whiskey. Whiskey, you do this or you die. It's a very simple matter. Very simple. You do it or you die. As I don't like it here, well, you find a better place, you can go to it. It says, there may be some wrongs we can never fully right. So don't worry about it. Do the best you can. Do the best you can. Be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble. Says the same thing. No matter what you're reading about, whether you're reading about the second step, the third step, the sixth step, it's all the same. It's all the same. And what amounts to is very simple. Be a nice person. Do good. Don't be such a shit. Get on with your life. Let's get to it. Have faith in God. He brought you the way you are. He brought you the way you are. And that ain't so bad, is it, gang? Huh? No more whining. If, you know what I'm going to say now, you know what this is. If we are painstaking, that is, we take pains, with this phase of our development, we'll be amazed before we're halfway through. I said to him, I had about 2-3 years, I guess. I said, when do I get these promises? You know, they read them in all the meetings. I'm not getting any of that stuff. He said, are you amazed? I said, no, I don't think so. He said, well, hell, you're not even halfway through. That's what it says. We'll be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. Can you imagine that? Any freedom I could possibly have would be new. I never had any freedom. I never did. I could never go or come or do or not do. I went where the alcohol took me. I wasn't free to come and go. I had to be where the booze was. I was tethered to the drink. I couldn't be, sometimes, you know, like go to a baseball game. Jesus Christ, that's 4 hours. I managed to get very drunk at most of the ballparks, but that's no way to go to a ball game. Better stay home and get drunk. You don't get too much trouble. And a new happiness. I don't think I was ever happy. I don't think so. I had pleasure. You know, pleasure comes from time to time, but I was really never happy. And that's an ongoing thing. I think I have that now. It's obviously, in my case, it has to be new. We will not regret the past or wish to shut the door on it. That's what I was telling you before. Experience. Don't shut the door on the past. That's gold, that past of yours and mine. That's gold, brother. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. Can you imagine an alcoholic comprehending the word serenity and knowing peace? I never had a peaceful moment when I was on that whiskey. I was going to it or coming from it or getting around it or getting off it or getting on it or covering it up or something. No peace. And this, it says, we comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. That's important. Here we go again. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. Don't tear up that past. That's very, very important stuff. We will lose interest in... No. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. That was me. In addition to being hopeless and powerless, I was also useless. You could bring a guy here from Venus I said, "What's that thing in the chair there?" He said, "That's useless. The one in his underwear with a bottle of vodka and a cigarette there? That's old useless over there. He's of no use to anybody, including himself." That was me. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. I don't want to push you too much. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And our book says life is not something to be endured or mastered, that it's an adventure and a pleasure, and it is. In my life, most times, I know it to be a gift, and I know it to be a prayer, sometimes even a song. I'm a happy camper most of the time. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. Why? I can do that, especially in AA, I can do that. I go on that intuitive plane. I'm usually right. Of course, when I was drinking, I had the Sidum touch. You know, that's Midas spelled backwards. Everything I touched turned to shit. And here's the thing that's in every reading of this book. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us all the things we could not do for ourselves. And I'm here to tell you that these are not extravagant promises. They're not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. Always. At this point, having made the amends and all of that stuff, I guess I was here almost a year and a half, maybe two, I can't remember. But things were beginning to switch around. I had a really good job. Things were really turning around, you know, things, material things, but things, nonetheless, things that, you know, the house got painted, had another car, that kind of stuff, you know, back in the golf club, et cetera, et cetera. And I was very happy getting along the way it was. And I'm going to meetings every night. And I knew what was important. I knew that this was important. I knew that everything I had, everything I hoped to have would come from here. I don't know who told me that or whether anybody ever told me that or whether I just figured it out or what. But I knew what was important. Sometimes I'd be criticized, you know. I'd say, "What are you doing there? There's meetings every night. You got to do something else." I'd say, "I don't have to do anything else. I've already done everything else." And so I kept going, and I kept going. And why wouldn't I? Why wouldn't I? Why wouldn't I? That next step says continue. Why the hell would I not continue? Says continue, continue. I'll continue. I continue everything. I continue admitting that I'm powerless over alcohol, believing that there is a power greater than mine, deciding that I'm going to stay with this power and be with it, writing, being careful not to hurt people, to further have another list that I have to make, of being ready, of asking, of praying, of receiving, of acting. I continue. I continue. Why not? People sometimes go away from here. Oftentimes go away from here. Oftentimes they go. They go for some reason or the other. I continue to be here. I remember the past. I remember my past. I was, just as the book describes, brother, a big tornado, roaring through the lives of other people. That's what the book says. And they give us the illustration of this fool who comes up out of his storm cellar and says to his wife, "Isn't it nice? Isn't it nice the wind stopped blowing? What an idiot. Everything around him is flat. Isn't it nice the wind stopped blowing? Isn't it nice that I stopped drinking? Am I not terrific that I don't drink anymore? Do you not wish to pat my back that I don't drink? Isn't it nice the wind stopped blowing? In the meantime, a book written in 1939 says, sweet relationships are destroyed. Imagine that, 1939. Sweet relationships are destroyed. Sweet relationships, the relationship of husband to wife, father to child, friend to friend, partner to partner, destroyed. Isn't it nice the wind stopped blowing? That's not enough, gang. We got to put it back where it was before we got our little hands on it. A mumbled apology will not do. They don't deliver the promises on that. They deliver the promises on direct amends. Putting it back where it was before I ruined it. My wife deserves a husband. Not much of a one, but she deserves a husband. My kids deserve a father. Sensible enough, huh? My friends deserve a friend. My partners deserve a partner. My students deserve a teacher. That's where I was before I screwed it up. Put it back. Put it back. The monetary amends were the easiest ones. But there are spiritual amends and emotional amends, difficult amends. Put it back where it was. Make yourself vulnerable. Offer yourself up. Say, here I am. You tell me what I can best do to make this better for you. And I'll do it. I went down there to that school. I saw him. I saw all the teachers. I said, I'm back here. And Drake comes over. I'm in AA. You let me know what I can do for you. And little by little, one by one, the damnedest things happened. Phones would ring. People would ask me to do something. I'd do it. I said, whatever you people want, you put up with me. It's amazing stuff. It really is. And you know, and I know, and anybody who's ever been in academic life knows that if you're fired from a school as a tenured professor, you can't go back. Can never go back. It's all over. Not only in that school, it's all over in all schools. 1992, I was a distinguished visiting professor. Same school. I've been a full tenured professor of law since 1984. I was an adjunct professor of law 10 years before that. The guy hired me. I said, you can't do it because I got fired for 10 years. He said, how with that? That's a long time ago. That was. You're hired. I said, okay, boss. How's that? 1984, a guy said to me, teacher at one of the schools, I was teaching in two schools at the same time, including the one that fired me in 1984. Teacher said to me, they're building a brand new law school in Miami, Florida. You want to go? I want to go. Are you kidding? Zoom. And we went. Fully accredited school. I'm the senior tenured professor of law. How do you like them apples? Is that magic? Bet your ass. How did that happen? I said, I don't know. I went to a lot of meetings. Now, don't get excited. You're not going to get appointed tenured professor of law either. But that's what happened to me. Yeah? That's what happened to me. Continue. Are you kidding me? Continue. I want more. I want more. I want everything I can get out of this thing. I want more. I want as more as I can get. And what is it? It's a search for God is what it is. It's a search for God. And he tells us, and our book tells us, to be of maximum service. And we go into that 10-step, just continue. Continue doing what you're doing. Look at yourself. Take a personal inventory. Personal. You, not somebody else. Look yourself over. When you're wrong, admit it. Not a big deal. You don't have to hang yourself. You don't have to run around, throw yourself on the floor. You say, I admit I'm wrong. You can even say it to them if it will help. That's what the book says. Say it to the other person if you think it would help. You have no idea, this ego of mine, how difficult it is for me to admit that I'm wrong. It's like putting a knife in my chest. Physically, I will, oh, everything goes, my stomach goes wrong, my ass goes wrong, everything goes wrong. Wrong? Who's wrong? I'm wrong? Oh. Oh. I might not have been quite right there. That won't do. Admit when you're wrong. Promptly. Surely means within a lifetime. Would you disagree with that? Because the idea is you don't want to build up some more problems. That's all. You don't want to build up some more problems. You don't want to build up some more resentments. And the book, you know, everything we do, the book is so clear on this. The book says, listen, dope to me. It said, you are not cured of alcoholism. That's what it says. What you have is a daily reprieve, contingent upon the maintenance of a spiritual condition. It says it's easy to rest on your laurels. You find me some laurels and I'll rest on them. It's easy to rest on them. Why shouldn't I rest on my laurels? Right? I've been in this thing 29 years. I got a means all the time. I'm leading, I'm doing 12-step studies all over the country. I can rest on my laurels. Why not? I got some laurels to rest on. You got some extra laurels? Give me your laurels. I'll rest on those. Goddamn book says we are in trouble if we do. I don't need any more trouble. That's why I continue, and I continue everything. Everything. I continue to go to meetings. I continue to have a sponsor. I continue to be a sponsor. I'm a member of my group. I continue to be as useful as I can be around here. Remember, gang, sober is as high as we go here. That's as high as we go. We don't have sober, sober is sober, or just sober is as high as we go. That's it. And what is it? It's your sharing with me. Am I sharing with you? That's what it is. And it hasn't changed. It's still one alcoholic talking to another. And that's where recovery begins. And when we get to this 10th step, it says, by now, it says, we have ceased fighting anything, anybody, or anything, including alcohol. The fight is over. It says sanity has been restored. Well, don't take any bets on that. Sanity has been restored. The fight is all over. You have taken all of the medicine. When you're into step 10, you're beyond alcoholism, and you're into the business of life by continuing what brought you to this point anyhow. Why in the world would you stop doing something that made you so well? Why would you decide that something else is going to do you better? When your history and your whole life shows you that this is the program that came into your life and saved your life. And there is no other. Don't talk to me about another fellowship. There is no other fellowship. Not for alcoholics. There is. This is it. So continue. Continue to be what you are and continue to be where you are. And continue to seek power, because that's the perennial problem, is the pursuit of this elusive concept of power, of going from powerless to being a source of spiritual power. It's a great journey. And the joy The joy, the book says, is in the journey. It's in the seeking and the searching that we find each other. And it's in each other that we find the power. And without each other, where would we go? And what would we do? There would be no we, there would be no us. That's it. So why don't we come back in 10 minutes? Thank you.